Thanks, Bo. I appreciate that. What you were saying about the man who would rather kill his son than send him to an English boarding school rings true unbelievably. I remember years ago I read the autobiography of C.S. Lewis called Surprised by Joy, and I thought enough of it, I gave a copy of it to my dad for either a Father's Day or a birthday. And he started reading that, and he said, "Have you read this?" I said, yeah, I wouldn't have given it to you if I hadn't." But he just couldn't believe, he was blown away by what C.S. Lewis had to say about what went on in English boarding schools in the years that he was there. I mean, things I'm not even going to say from up here, but it was just unbelievable. So I can see why the man would make that extreme statement, that he would rather kill his son than send him to an English boarding school. Just almost unbelievable. I think my dad was almost affronted to have that book in his house after he read one. But it's in my house now. That's the thing. Eventually it all comes back. Well, I appreciate very much getting to be here with you today and the exchanges that we've had. I appreciate the things that have been said about, have you talked to somebody about Jesus this week, and Paul's emphasis on that, both at the beginning and end of what he was saying there. It reminds me of a story I've told you before. You may or may not remember it, but it was about tenacity or stick-to-itiveness. Out on the western frontier, some of the cowboys years ago developed a method to bring a wild steer in from the range, because if you have a two-year-old steer out there just among the mountains, it's been in the timber and it's gotten used to that. It's a real tough customer to handle because he doesn't want to go with you back to the ranch when it's time to do that. And so the cowboys, rather than fight a steer every inch of way back to the ranch, they would just, when they went after one, they would take with them a little burro, which is the Spanish word for donkey. They'd take a donkey or a burro out there with them. And when they roped or lassoed the steer, they would just tie it neck to neck with that burro, just right up close. And then when they let go, of course, the burro had a terrible time at first. That steer threw him all over the place, threw him into rocks, threw him into the bushes, and time after time they'd both fall down on the ground. But there was a difference between the burro and the steer. The burro had an idea, and every time he got thrown down, when he'd get up, he'd be a step closer to the ranch. No matter how often that burro got to his feet, he was always just a little closer. And this would go on and on, so the cowboys would be back at the ranch. But after about a week, here would come the burro leading the tamest-looking steer you ever saw, because he just outlasted him. He just did not give up. He's stubborn for a reason, and his stubbornness helped him. We need some of that. We need that stick-to-itiveness. The Lord tells us that we must labor if we would enter into rest, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 11. And again in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10. Whatever you do, do it with your might. We are going to be what we are in the process of becoming. And it's important that we are always a step closer to home. We're always headed in the right direction. During the reign of Oliver Cromwell, the British government began to run low on silver for its coinage. Cromwell sent his men to investigate in a local cathedral to see if they could find any silver there, any kind of precious metal. They reported back to him, "The only silver we could find in there is in the statues of the saints standing in the corners." Cromwell said, "Good, we'll melt down the saints and put them into circulation." And that's a good message for us. It's a good idea. Faith working by love. Love seeing the best interest of other people. This is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. Thanks be to God who giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. The Bible tells us, Old Testament and New, that we're supposed to warn people. Ezekiel 33 is a classic illustration of that. The New Testament says in Jude 22 and 23, that we save some with compassion, others we save with fear, but in either case, we're snatching them out of the fire. It's put this way in Proverbs 24, verse 10. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. If you forbear to deliver them that are drawn unto death and those that are ready to be slain, if you say, we knew it not, doth not he that pondereth the heart consider it? The one who ponders the heart, of course, is God. Doesn't God consider it? He that keepeth the soul, doth he not know it? And shall he not render unto every man according to his works? Life is serious. Little day-to-day decisions matter to God and need to matter to us. When Ed was talking this morning before the collection, I thought of that story about, and I think I've mentioned this to you before as well, probably. A man who said that he lived in Nazi Germany during the time of the Holocaust. Here's what he said. He said, I considered myself a Christian. I attended church since I was a small boy. We heard the stories of what was happening to the Jews, but like most people, we tried to distance ourselves from the reality of what was taking place. After all, what could we do to stop it? And he said, a railroad track ran behind our small church building, and each Sunday we would hear the whistle in the distance and then the clacking of the wheels moving over the track. But we became disturbed one Sunday when we noticed cries coming from the train as it passed by. And we grimly realized that the train was carrying Jews. They were like cattle in those cars. Week after week, that train whistle would blow. We would dread to hear the sound of those wheels as we were meeting in our meeting house, because we knew the Jews would begin to cry to us as they passed our church building. He said it was so terribly disturbing, we couldn't do anything to help those people, and yet their screams tormented us, so we decided that the only way to keep from being disturbed by their cries was to sing our hymns. And if some of the screams reached our ears anyway, we would just sing a little louder until we couldn't hear them anymore. He said, years passed, but in my sleep I still hear them crying for help. The reason I cite that is because in 1973, our Supreme Court declared nationally that it was legal to kill unborn babies. And since then, we've killed more than the entire population of Canada, and it continues. We talked this morning about passion. How do you feel about the slaughter of these innocents? And what have you done besides just sing a little louder? And I'm not even talking primarily politically here. I don't believe really that politics is the best way that we can help the most, although it is perhaps a way. But I mainly here don't want to talk about what we can't do. I'm just interested in what we can do. God never expects you to do what you cannot do. But if we can't save all the Jews, can we do something about saving one Jew? Can I help one girl to change her mind about killing her baby, who otherwise would do so? Can I help save the life of one baby, and then another, and then another? Those are victories. And a couple of years ago, a number of people in the churches financially helped a Christian family who wanted to adopt an unwanted baby girl, and it was coming through some kind of a procedure. There was money needed. People from far and near helped to finance that. And that, I thought, was the church at its finest. That's a victory. A little girl was taken into a Christian family where she'll be taught the Lord's way from the Lord's book. And she's flourishing in that adoptive family. She's probably 5 years old by now, and maybe older than that. But she's flourishing there. There are many, many other cases of this same type of thing. That passage in Proverbs 24, verse 12, says that there is a day of reckoning coming. And James 4:17, which Robbie read this morning, says, if we know to do good and we don't do it, to us, it's a sin. When I get to the place where I can read the last verse of James 4 and say, so what? Who cares? Then I should know that I'm in trouble. Well, there's a great deal from the book of Joel about this same kind of a subject, about the spiritual climate of a group of people. The people in God's day, in Joel's time, had gone to sleep. So in chapter 1, verse 5 of Joel, he says, wake up. In chapter 2, verse 12, he says, serve me with all your heart. In chapter 3, verse 14, he says, you're in the valley of decision. It speaks of something that's balanced and could go either way, like a human life that could go either way. Many people were on the edge of their commitment to God. Which way is the teetering thing going to go? They were half-hearted. They were not totally given to the Lord. He says in Joel chapter 2, verse 13, rend your hearts and not your garments. All the way through the Old Testament, we read about people rending their clothes, tearing their clothes. It was symbolic. God said, rend your hearts and not your garments. I don't care about you rending your clothes. I care about how your heart is. That was the main thing. It's easy to have things look good outwardly, but God sees inwardly and will judge according to what he sees. Do you love the Lord now as much as you did when you were first baptized, or even more? Or is it less? We sing a song that says, sweeter as the years go by. Is that the case with you as an individual? I ask that because many find a temptation toward apathy as they age. Many, many people do. The debilities of life, the lessening of physical ability, it can make that tend to happen. But when people lose their zeal for God, they tend to become content to just go through the motions, go through the ritual, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof. And the danger of that kind of a spiritual climate is that when you're in that mindset, the house can be on fire and you don't even know that it's on fire until it's too late. Indifference is a sin that God cannot tolerate. And the time comes that judgment must begin at the house of God, 1 Peter 4:17. So in the book of Joel, he describes the coming day of the Lord. And he says, turn unto me with all your heart. That expression means to come back to. You used to be there with all your heart. There were times when in your better moments you were there. If you're not there now, he says, come back to me with all your heart. One of the worst symptoms of apathy is a lack of love for the lost. I've seen places where people will fight over what color the rug on the floor of the meeting house is going to be, but they evidence no concern at all for the people living up and down the street from the meeting house. No concern whatsoever. Just can't get interested in that. And I know how messy evangelism can be, believe me. I know how hard it is to get people to be interested in the gospel. And after some bad experiences, it can be hard to care. But I think the successes that we've had should make us hunger for more successes. Every time I see Sam here, it just warms my heart because he is here on a human level as a direct result of some of you knocking on his door and saying, hey, how about talking about spiritual things? He said nobody had ever come and said that before. And he got interested. He's been here now for years with us. That is a success. And nothing breeds success like success. Ezekiel was told to go out and speak it regardless of what the response is. And if you do that, then you have delivered your own soul. Everybody else is responsible for theirs. So Joel says, blow the trumpet and sound the alarm. Be concerned about your lack of concern. God will judge unconcerned lifestyle. And this command to turn back to the Lord in verse 12 of Joel 2 means to just give him yourself. Not halfway doing what he says. The Lord must be Lord of all, or he is not Lord at all. So he says, turn to me with all your heart. Rend your heart and not your garments. Do more than just go through the motions. Psalm 34, verse 18. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. That reminds me of Kipling's Recessional. The tumult and the shouting dies, the captains and the kings depart. Still stands thine ancient sacrifice, an humble and a contrite heart. Lord God of hosts, be with us yet, lest we forget, lest we forget. So easy to forget. The Danish philosopher Soren Kierkegaard told a parable about a wild duck. This duck was flying over Europe with a lot of other his fellow ducks. But during the flight, he somehow got away from the others and he landed in a barnyard where there were a bunch of tame ducks. and he enjoyed the corn. He stayed for an hour, and the hour stretched into a day, and the day stretched into a week, and the week stretched into a month, and he kept enjoying the corn and the safety of the barnyard. So he stayed for the whole summer. And then one autumn day, when the flock of wild ducks was winging its way back southward again, they passed over the barnyard. And the call of the wild ducks was heard. It came into the hearing of this other duck. And he stirred at first with the thrill and the joy and the delight of his fellow compatriots. He wanted to see them again. He starts flapping his wings and he rises up in the air to join his old comrades in their flight. But he found that the life in the barnyard had made him so soft and so heavy that he couldn't get any higher than the top of the barn. So he dropped back down into the barnyard and he said to himself, "Oh, well, who cares? My life here is safe. I enjoy the corn." And he just stayed there. And every summer and every fall when he'd hear the wild ducks honking overhead, his eyes would gleam for a moment and he'd start to flap his wings, but a little less each time till finally the day came when the wild ducks flew overhead and uttered their cry and he didn't pay the least bit of attention to them. That's a parable, in the words of Kierkegaard, for how the soul can forget the high ideals, the high standards that it used to have and start being content with lower things. The greatest danger to us as believers in Jesus is to become content with lower standards. The danger to become half-hearted in living for Jesus is very real. It's the curse of apathy, the curse of indifference. So I want to leave that message with you today. There's much more that could be said, as Ed said this morning. You could talk a long time. But I do remember something that the elders passed out one time, a sheet of paper to the participants in the congregation. It didn't say, "Stop on time." They were much politer than that. They said, "Be aware of the time." I like that. It's just perfectly put. Be aware of the time, which is easier said than done, because sometimes I get all hooped up. I get to go in, and I'm the only person in the room that doesn't know what time it is. So we'll conclude there. I appreciate very much being able to be with you today, the interchange we've had back and forth. And now it's time to once again briefly extend the Lord's invitation. It was pointed out downstairs that that's not the same thing in the afternoon as it is in the morning. But we do want to give you another opportunity to accept the Lord or to bring anything that you care to our attention as a group. If you'll just let us know about it by coming forward to one of the front seats as we stand together and sing one more song.